This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, well, bad news for Commanders fans that were desperate to sign T. Higgins. He's not going anywhere. The Bengals are planning on franchise tagging Higgins for the second year in a row. It's going to pay him something along the lines of $26, $27 million. The plan, according to sources, is to keep the trio of Chase, Higgins, and Burrow together for at least another year.
Okay, so I guess, you know, in reading this, this seems to be like the first step in getting him to sign a long-term contract extension. They don't want him playing on the tag at 26.8. I mean, he wouldn't be thrilled with that. That would be a problem. You read this and you follow the Bengals a little bit because of your love for Joe Burrow. This seems to be, based on the reporting that I read yesterday, the first step towards trying to work out. And by the way, they haven't taken that step. The actual franchise tag window opens today at 4 p.m. and then ends 2 weeks from today on March 4th at 4 p.m. But I guess my question to you is, they're planning on making a run at signing T. Higgins to a long-term contract extension, correct?
Yeah, that would be my guess, is that you put him on the tag for a little bit. And I believe what their plan is, it's the non-exclusive, so somebody can negotiate with him, and then all they have to do is match. It's similar to what Baltimore did with Lamar a couple of years ago. It obviously ended up not being much for Baltimore, but it allows them to match what other offer, so you're kind of letting everybody else do the work for you. But in doing so, it gives you time to iron out the Jamar Chase extension. You get that one out of the way. You can kind of maneuver the money around to have a lesser cap hit, and then you can sign T. Higgins to an extension.
Yeah, so a couple of things. Number one, this is a story for our city because and our team, because I think many of you believe that T. Higgins should be either at the top of the list or near the top of the list of free agent offseason targets. And he would be the number one free agent on the market when free agency begins if he gets there without being tagged. As Denton said, the non-exclusive franchise tag means that teams can come in and sign him to an offer sheet, and then that gives the Bengals the chance to either match it and keep him or work out compensation. The, you know, NFLPA, the collective bargaining agreement says in the case of a franchise tag player being signed under the non-exclusive tag that the compensation is 2 first-round picks. I don't think that anybody's going to give Cincinnati 2 first-round picks for T. Higgins. And, you know, quite honestly, they would prefer not to give Cincinnati anything. They would prefer to work out a long-term deal and sign him as an unrestricted free agent. So Cincinnati's preventing that for the time being. But the question, I guess, is are they preventing that because they want compensation back for him and they're willing to let him go with another offer and they think they'll get offers? Or is it just a way to buy time here to figure out the Chase deal and to ultimately, I mean, I'm reading that the plan is for Cincinnati to sign Chase, to sign Higgins, and to sign Hendrickson, you know, as their pass rushing defensive end. If that's the case, let me just say this. You know what I think about Burrow in that offense. It's what you think.
Yes.
That thing was unstoppable at times. That was the best pass offense in the NFL. They struggled on defense. And if I were a Bengals fan, I'd want Higgins back. Chase is going to get Jefferson money, if not more. I mean, he won the Triple Crown this year. He was the best receiver in football and one of the best, had one of the greatest seasons we've ever seen. You know, that kind of went under the radar a little bit. He's going to get a Jefferson deal or higher. Is it smart to build a football team with two receivers making $30 million or more?
A survey would say no to that. I mean, you had like the nice thing that they would have is the window is the offense. They're not going to win a championship based off a defense at this point.
The window's Joe Burrow.
The window is Joe Burrow, the same way that we are hoping here that the window is Jaden Daniels. You just have different eras of windows. So the window is going to be Joe Burrow. My hope is that they spend so much money on Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins and maybe a little bit on the offensive line that Trey Hendrickson slips through the cracks a little bit and he needs a new home because he's had 35 sacks in the last 2 years. I was stunned when I saw that.
17 and a half, 17 and a half.
Yeah.
Back to back.
Insanity. Like that guy,
does not get the same love that Myles Garrett, that TJ Watt, that even Max Crosby gets.
No. So I hope he slips through the cracks a little bit, but the plan should be, I mean, Joe Burrow has said publicly, and if he's saying it publicly, you know he's saying it behind closed doors as well. They need to keep T. Higgins. He wants to keep T. Higgins, and because he is your franchise quarterback and the one that if you're the ownership group is going to be making you a lot of money for years to come, you got to make him happy.
So in our conversations about T. Higgins, we have both agreed that from a pair of hands standpoint, he may have the best in the league. It's not an exaggeration. He's got the best hands of any receiver in the league. Certainly you could argue that. The question is he worth $30 million plus a year? I don't know if he is. And, you know, ultimately teams, even with all unlimited cap space for the most part, you have to make the decision because you can't set a precedent by overpaying somebody that you don't believe deserves it. But the market, the open market, I think would dictate that Higgins ends up in the $30 million per year average. Like, the Bengals would actually be better off paying him for one more season at $26.17 million, but you can't franchise him a third time. You can, but it's 144%. Now, that still might be a good deal. I mean, actually, when you think about it, Cincinnati going the franchise tag route, $26.17 million is an average for 25, or as a salary for 25, Denton, would be less than the average annual they would pay him on a long-term contract extension.
Right.
It may not be from an accounting standpoint as big of a cap number in 25, but it would be more money on a per year basis. They'd have him locked in for years to come. But if you go 144% and now you're in the 30 something million for next year, it still may be less than what he would get on the open market next year. The issue is, if you go that route, you have an unhappy player. Players don't want to play under that, especially, you know, Kirk did here, understood, because the team lowballed him so much, so he didn't really have the option of taking any long-term deal. The team didn't offer him a legitimate long-term deal at any point, including after his last year. But playing quarterback on back-to-back franchise tags is different than playing a position where there's more risk. I mean, Higgins would much prefer to have a $100 million plus signing bonus and a 5-year deal at $30 million per year, something like that, than playing year by year on franchise tags. But maybe it makes sense for Cincinnati. You just would have an unhappy player in that situation.
And eventually that having that cap hit is going to be ton when it comes to filling out. Because it's not like their passing offense obviously was the butter to their bread, but their defense sucked. And you have to get better on defense. Unless they are of the belief that it was the defensive coordinator who was a hotshot candidate for head coaching positions for like the last 2 years, and unless they think that he was the sole reason why things didn't work, you have to allocate some sort of money on that side of the football, which would lead me to believe that a long-term deal would be way easier to do that when you can maneuver that money around.
The other thing, too, and just thinking about it, because I remember when we had these conversations, you know, the third tag, which I don't think anybody's ever gotten, right? I don't think there have been multiple players that have gotten tagged twice. I don't think we've had a player that got tagged three times, right? Pretty sure we haven't.
I'm looking that up now. I can't imagine.
It's 144% of the previous year's salary. Okay, so it's not an average of the top five. That's how you determine that first year. After that, it's 120% from last year, and then it's 144%. So you're talking about the dude would end up making $35, $36 million next year.
So it seems like there's been a few players that have gotten franchise tagged 3 years in a row. The one
really?
That keeps popping up is Walter Jones of the Seahawks.
Oh,
and they eventually
right.
had a long-term
in
deal.
In the early days, yeah. Because the franchise tag history, I'm going to look it up, but I want to say it started once free agency started.
It looks like it started in 1993.
That's the year free agency started. Yeah.
I did not realize free agency was that young.
Yeah, 93 was the first year. Joe Gibbs saw it coming, and that's when he retired. There were a lot of reasons he retired. But it was Washington was an old team. You had a salary cap for the first time, free agency. Before that, there was no free agency. There was no salary cap. So teams that were willing to spend a lot of money to keep players on, the injured list, and long-term lists were rewarded by being able to develop them. Washington did that with Mark Rippon, as an example. All right, what else do you got?
Spring training.
Cincinnati. I think they're going to try to keep this. I think what you said about a window, I think they're looking at it like, we have a window with Joe Burrow here. This is another window. We won 9 games with a bad defense. But we were, remember, they had some games that they lost that they should not have lost.
Yeah.
The Baltimore game at home, they should not have lost that game.
And the Kansas City game in week 2.
The Chiefs game in week 2. You know, their losses, they were only beaten, they had 8 losses this year, okay? By 6, by 1, by 5, by 3 in overtime. By 1, by 7, by 6, and the only team that clubbed them, the only team was Philadelphia. They lost 37-17. Every other game was a one-score game, 6 points or less, that they lost. They went for 2 to beat Baltimore at the end, didn't they?
If I remember correctly, yes, they did.
Yeah. But that was the game in Baltimore. The game in Cincinnati was when they were in kind of field goal range in overtime after Lamar fumbled. You remember this more than I do. Am I remembering it correctly?
Missed? Yeah, McPherson, whatever his name is.
They got really conservative, and they put him out there for a long field goal, and he missed it.
They just started taking knees, and you're just like, this is not going to work. And I think it was like 54-yard or something like that.
If they had gotten into the postseason by winning one more football game this year, they would have been a tough out in the AFC playoffs.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, you almost have to look at that and say, okay, our defense sucked and we still won 9 games and we were 1 game out and we would have been hell to deal with. Nobody would have wanted to play us.
Yeah,
all right, what else?
They would have matched up with Buffalo. It would have been awful. Spring training starts this week for the Nationals. Davey Martinez announced over the weekend that Mackenzie Gore is going to be the opening day spring training starter. A lot of expectations on Mackenzie Gore. I'm hoping that this is the year where he takes a big step into consistency. We've seen some ups for him. We saw a little bit of downs from him last year as well.
Interesting column this morning by Barry Zwerluga in the Washington Post just about the Nats and about Lerner and, you know, the state of them spending, not spending, etc. Mackenzie Gore is clearly their best starter. I'm just curious, what is the situation with Cade Cavalli for 2025?
I believe
is he going to be ready to pitch or not?
He's definitely working back from injury. I don't know if we have any concrete idea of what his year will look like. I believe Josiah Gray is also making his way back from injury. So they're optimistic that we get him sooner rather than later, but I don't think that he is fully working out now.
I know there's some excitement about Cruz and Wood and some of the young guys, but I mean, Juan Soto's in New York playing with the Mets. The Phillies added stuff. The Braves have won division titles, you know, in 3 of the last 4 years or whatever it is. Like, they might be improved, but are they going to be improved enough to have meaningful games in September? I don't know. Like, they're certainly not giving Mike Rizzo an opportunity to bring in a star of some sort. All right, what else do you have?
Did you pay attention at all to the festivities this weekend of Saturday Night Live and their 50th anniversary?
I watched, okay, I'll just tell you. I watched the first hour of it with my wife,
mm-hmm.
and I found it to be unfunny for a lot of it, boring, a bit disorganized, and that's when I did what I told you I would not do last week, and I turned
it flipped on the All-Star
game. All-Star
game.
Exhibition tournament, or whatever it was called.
So I watched a little bit of SNL 50. That's not exactly why I'm bringing this up, but because it was such a big deal and it was on Sunday, irony. But they did this whole like rollout, and I'm curious if you saw, because I know you're a big, big Nirvana fan, that Post Malone did a cover of Smells Like Teen Spirit on one of the events.
I heard about it. I did not see it. I had turned it from that point, and I'm upset about that. Yeah. So, I can go back and watch. I'll watch it on YouTube. Was it good or not?
Well, let's find out together, because I have a snippet of it. I don't know if I can play the entire thing, but this is Post Malone playing Nirvana.
It's hard. It doesn't sound terrible as I'm listening to it. I need to watch it. Give me your thoughts.
I think Post Malone is talented.
He's super talented. And by the way, I'm pretty sure has covered a bunch of grunge songs, because I like Post Malone, and I think he's covered. I think he covered Better Man, Pearl Jam's Better Man, at some show. He may have done that on Howard Stern a couple of years ago. I think I'm remembering it to be Post Malone. I think he's covered some Alice in Chains. So he's a big grunge fan.
Right.
But that'd be one I'd want to watch.
So I think the performance of it, you know, Dave Grohl is on drums, which I know is something that obviously you would like. Dave Grohl, a member of Nirvana, for those that are unaware. I think this area has a pretty good familiarity with
Dave
Grohl.
He's from here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The performance element, I thought, was fine. You know, Post Malone, as you mentioned, has done a lot of covers in the past. I think it's tough.
Am I right about that? Was he the one that did Better Man on Stern? It was a couple of years ago,
but I know that he's done grunge covers.
He was excellent doing it.
I think he's a very talented singer. It is just a very difficult
task. It was Post Malone on Stern.
It's a difficult task to cover Smells Like Teen Spirit. That's kind of an iconic song.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Nevermind is flat out one of the great rock albums. You can call it grunge, whatever you want. It's one of the great rock albums of all time. I did not see it. I will go watch it, though. I'll be very interested to watch it. I think he's talented, and he likes clearly some of the same music that I like. What else?
Are you going to watch Court of Gold on Netflix? It's a documentary that followed the Team USA gold medal run this summer with Steph involved, Kevin Durant, LeBron. You're getting a lot of access to the players on that run that they went on. It dropped this morning.
Probably not. I did watch something last night. It was about the girl. It was the murder of the girl from New York whose boyfriend killed her out in Wyoming in the park.
TikTok girl?
Petito.
Yeah.
Gabby Petito. I mean, sort of screwed up the whole process in which the family of the killer, the murderer, handled it. It was pretty repulsive. But anyway, that to me would be more enjoyable to watch. Court of Gold, it's called?
Yeah, Court of Gold.
Than what I watched on Sunday night.
Anyone that watches this, if they already are not a fan of Kevin Durant, I've just seen some clips from it. You're going to love Kevin Durant by the end of this. I think Kevin Durant's going to come off really, really good.
Have you seen some of his quotes from the last couple of days?
I have seen some of his quotes from the last couple of days. If you put that to the side, some of the stuff in this documentary is sensational.
Right. Okay. Look, I mean, KD's one of the all-time greatest and most fun scorers in the history of the game to watch. But I'm going to get to a bit of a take on Sunday night's All-Star game, and a lot of it has to do with what Durant said about it. But anyway, what else?
Right.
If you're asking me, will I watch that? I'll certainly give it a shot. To me, it's more interesting to find out how these guys interact with each other than it is to watch them on All-Star weekend.
Definitely. And just, I will always relive that run. Those final two games with Steph, who's one of my favorite players ever, going crazy. I watch that every couple months, to be honest. Like, I love that final game. Final piece of news here before we get to the All-Star stuff. I left all that out here because I figured we'd do a segment on it. But the agent of Caitlin Clark, Aaron Kane, said that the WNBA will never be able to pay Caitlin Clark what she's worth to the league, calling it impossible to reach that number.
Well, I've read things over the last several months about, you know, people trying to quantify what she meant to the league. It's like insane. Like, it's more than just the league. Apparently, her impact just on the Indianapolis local economy was like in the tens to maybe even close to, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. That's crazy. But her economic impact on the city of Indianapolis, where she played, for those of you who don't know, in the WNBA, was incredible.
I have that
clearly
number, by the way.
I mean, we don't even need a study to understand that, I don't know, 8 out of the 10 people that watched the WNBA last year were watching for the first time, and the reason was Caitlin Clark.
I have some numbers on that for you.
Okay.
An economist at Indiana University Columbus, I would assume that's somewhere in Indianapolis, they said that Caitlin Clark was responsible for a $36 million economic impact in the city of Indianapolis and almost 27% of the league's economic activity for 2024.
All right, so I said tens of millions, and I thought I had read something that it may have been $100 million, but $36 million in economic impact to the city of Indianapolis. And 27% of what? The league's what?
Of the league's 2024 economic activity, which includes attendance, merchandise sales, and television.
And what does the WNBA do in top line revenue?
That is not in this article. It's not very high, but her salary is expected to be $78,000.
Yeah, that's the point, right? Is that whatever you read to begin with, it's somebody saying what they're paying her in a salary isn't anywhere near what her actual worth to the league and the sport is. But I don't know how you change that when these salaries are collectively bargained, right? I think they are.
Yes, they
are. In the WNBA, right? There's a union. There's a collective bargaining agreement.
Yes, they are collectively bargained, so she can't really.
So there's a max. What's the max?
There's a max. I believe the max comes after the first contract, and I believe it's in the neighborhood of $264,000. So it's not even getting close to a million.
I think I read somewhere where like the league has this kind of budget, what they call a marketing budget, and it might be a $500,000. Dollars, like another $500,000. That seems so low, but I mean the league hemorrhaged for 28 years or whatever it was.
So
it was subsidized by the NBA.
We don't have the 2024 numbers, but in 2023 the estimated revenue of the WNBA was $200 million.
Okay,
so fair to think so, with Caitlin Clark it was a lot more.
Yeah, so basically she was worth, you know, close to $60 million of that. Whatever the increase was from the year before. I find it interesting too that some of the conversation about the WNBA after they got that big TV deal, that the NBA gave them a bigger chunk of the massive deal that they negotiated, right? What's the value? Is it $7 billion or whatever it is to the NBA? And they gave the WNBA a massive chunk of that deal for the first time. I mean, not, you know, 10% of it or whatever it was. What are the numbers? I'm getting mixed up. What was the TV deal that the NBA did? Was it $7 billion or like less than that? It's got to be less than that,
It was less than that.
Yeah, it can't be $7 billion.
But the WNBA announced an 11-year media rights deal. That the deal for the NBA was $2.2 billion or $200 million per year. And the WNBA is getting a part of that.
Okay. Well, there were people in the WNBA speaking of like possibilities of breaking away from the NBA to cut their own TV deals. Like, I mean, I understand that the WNBA is in a position it's never been in before. And the reason for that is Caitlin Clark. Number one, two, three, four, five, and six in terms of the reasons. Whatever number seven is, it's way down the list. Whatever number two is, it's way down the list. So I think that the NBA and its owners own the majority of the WNBA. So it's not something that they can do on their own. Leagues, I mean, I think people like Ted Leonsis and NBA owners own a majority of the WNBA. Haven't we gone through that before?
Yeah, we have gone through. Let me just readjust these numbers because I was way off. The NBA got a $76 billion TV deal over 11 years.
So it was $7 billion a year.
It was $7 billion a year.
Right, so roughly. That's what I was thinking of.
And the WNBA got a $2.2 billion over that time frame, which is about $200 million per year.
Right, okay. Yeah, but still, the biggest TV chunk they've ever gotten by far.
By far. And this had been when we knew that Caitlin Clark was going to... She hadn't reached the peak of what Caitlin Clark was at the WNBA because she was still like kind of struggling in July when this deal was done. But you knew that she was going to be a star and she had already driven a lot of eyes to the product.
Right. All right. I mean, I don't know what the... Look, her... She's not struggling. Her endorsement deals are massive. I would like to know what... I mean, has anybody done an overall compensation for Caitlin Clark's story? Do we know what her overall annual compensation is with endorsements? Because it's clearly not salary related in the WNBA.
It looks like she is in for an annual payday of about $11 million.
Yeah.
That does include her WNBA salary, but that's not a lot.
Right.
It makes up 1% of her earnings.
Right. Okay, what else? Do you have anything else?
That's all I got for you. I've saved the All-Star stuff so we can go over that later.
Yeah, I do have a take on that. We'll get to that next. Gary Williams next hour. Kevin Sheehan Show, The Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Before the NBA All-Star game had even ended, Kenny Smith on the broadcast spoke for most people saying, quote, "I think they're going to change the format back," closed quote. That was before it was even close to ending. So I lied on the show, not intentionally. I said I wasn't going to pay attention to anything over the weekend All-Star related. I did watch Mac McClung on a couple of his dunks. The one where he jumped over the car was kind of impressive, but whatever. He's won it three straight years. Mac McClung, just so everybody understands, is not the greatest dunker in the history of the game, okay? He's impressive because he's 6'3 or whatever he is, and you know, you don't expect Mac McClung to be the dunker that he is, but he's not the greatest dunker in the history of the game. The greatest dunker in my lifetime, NBA-wise, was Dominique Wilkins. I think Vince Carter, in terms of the contest, was the best ever. But the best dunker in my lifetime, a guy who would totally translate to today in terms of the way the ball's dunked, is Neek. He was the best. So I watched too much of what was an absolute dreadful exhibition performance, whatever it was. I mean, I really was doing it just to see how bad it could get. Did you watch any of it on Sunday night?
Of the All-Star game, I did watch a little bit of it.
Okay. So for those of you that don't care about this topic, just give me a minute to care a little bit, because it's probably going to speak to some of you who don't love the NBA and consider the NBA to be second tier at this point for you in terms of your sports rooting interests. So the NBA had to come up with a new format because last year... The players treated the game like it was a horse, you know, shooting contest, a horse game, and totally made a mockery of last year's East versus West. They brought East versus West back after being away from it for a few years, and the final score was 211 to 186. And despite, you know, former players and league people urging the players to treat it more like a competition, they didn't have time for it. They couldn't be bothered with treating it like a competition. So they had to pivot and they had to try something else. I mean, Adam Silver thought it was an absolute disgrace, as did the rest of the league. The TV ratings were outrageously low, so they switched it to what they had on Sunday night, which was basically a series of four teams, three of them of all-star players, one of them of rising star players, so that's second year or less, along with G League players, and they played a mini tournament, you know, two games to advance to the finals where there's no clock and they're playing the game to 40. So I didn't see a lot of the first two matchups, the semifinal matchups, I guess you could call them. I watched the championship game, which, by the way, got interrupted consistently by the TNT crew, by Kevin Hart. The whole night was, I mean, it was so bad. But they had to interrupt because they had to get commercials in, and these games were so short that it wasn't, you know, there was no rhythm to them at all. So the thing's been mocked in every corner of, you know, the basketball world as being the worst that we've ever seen. I have not seen TV ratings for it. Last year's was the second lowest in NBA history for the All-Star game. The year before that was the lowest. Last year, there was a marginal gain in audience size. It was still significantly lower than anything else other than the year before because they went back to East versus West. But anyway, the game itself, this up to 40 with no clock, it was the same thing as last year minus the format because the players were not taking it seriously. Winning the exhibition didn't mean anything. I mean, you still had players pulling up from half court. Steph pulled up from half court twice. He did make one of them. It was another kind of, you know, mocking and disrespect shown to the higher-ups in the league that had been trying to get the league's all-star players to stop basically chasing their customers away. You know, they've been chasing customers away in droves. But it's not impacted them. We just talked about it. You know, $7 billion a year in a new, you know, 11-year deal television offering. And, you know, the NBA is a bank for these guys. And it's just, you know, they're making outrageous sums of money. They're going to be able to buy teams in the future on their own. So they don't care what their employers try to urge them to do. But they have chased everybody away from what used to be a legitimate sports date on the calendar. I would not compare it to the Midsummer Classic, the Major League Baseball All-Star Game, but it was always the second best All-Star Game in sports. You know, it was a date in which it had some cachet. It had some stature on the sports calendar. Not anymore. The players did an incredible job, Dan Snyder-like, in chasing away fans from this event and viewers from this event because they couldn't be bothered with what, you know, the league wanted, what, you know, former players like Larry Bird wanted, which was just to compete a little bit, make it less of an exhibition, a skills exhibition, and a mockery of, you know, the game, you know, with half-court shots and matador defense and the whole thing. Just, you know, try hard for at least some of it. But they could not muster up the energy to do that. And so we ended up with the format that Kenny Smith said before it was over, quote, "I think they're going to change the format back." That's how bad it was to watch. You know, here's the thing that the NBA really needs to be concerned about is what Kenny Smith said. I don't even know that many people cared about whether or not they changed the format back. You know, we know in this town from the football team that apathy is much worse than anger. It is the lack of emotion that they should be concerned about. You know, last year, the second lowest rated game ever on TV. The year before that, the lowest. I mean, the players and their attitude towards this have basically driven away most of the people that used to enjoy this event. And now they were pissed for a while, angry for a while, but I think there's the possibility people are now apathetic about this. Like, okay, I've moved on. And by the way, they've got that issue with the regular season product in general. You know, their regular season product is not good. And fewer people are watching their regular season product. I didn't care about this event. Now, I don't know that they're targeting me. I mean, I'm an NBA playoff fan. I love the NBA playoffs, and you're not going to back me off of that. I mean, even last year, the NBA playoffs were great. And I don't care how the game's played, and it's played much differently than it used to be. The intensity of that product is completely different. But, you know, Draymond Green took a shot at the format the other night, saying something like, rising stars. Let me find the quote here. I had to work so hard to play on Sunday night of All-Star weekend. By the way, he was not an All-Star this year, but he's been an All-Star in the past. And because ratings are down, because the game's bad, we're bringing in rising stars. That's not a fix. I never played in the rising stars game my first 2 years. I didn't touch that game. And these guys get to touch the All-Star floor on Sunday night. Well, this is a, you know, sorry, Draymond, and I'm not talking to him specifically because, but the majority of players that have ruined this is a look in the mirror moment. I mean, last year in particular, with the urging of their higher-ups, of former players, that was about as selfish a moment as you could get. That was completely detached, you know, the players were. And so the reason you're having Adam Silver swing at anything to see if it works is because of what you guys did, the players did, the way you treated the game. Before the games and the events over the weekend, Kevin Durant said the following, quote, and this is really telling. He said, quote, I think that when you get events like this, All-Star Weekend, we, the players, don't worry about the competition. It's just more about celebrating the basketball family and the community around this time. So I talked about this on my podcast yesterday, but the one thing that you've got to give Kevin Durant credit for here is being honest and saying, sorry, but if you haven't noticed, this is not about you, it's about us. You know, the best players in the game getting a chance to hang out for a weekend, the All-Stars, and celebrate each other. That's what this is about for us. And by the way, I'm sure they have a great time, you know, and I would suggest moving forward that they do something like this Netflix special. They mic everybody up and they hold it at a high, you know, level restaurant or club, and you can put it on the E! Network and people can watch to see how these All-Stars during All-Star weekend interact with each other. You know, that's what they can do. I mean, Durant was very honest in that quote. This is not about the fans or the former players or the league. This is about us and celebrating each other. So this is a clear-cut indication of the way many of the players feel. You can sense that by watching the games the last couple of years. They're not games. They're exhibitions. You know, they're you know, skills. By the way, extreme skills on display, you know, pulling up from half court, you know, and shooting half court shots in the context of what's supposed to be, but it isn't a competition. Look, the NBA All-Star game just may be one of those things that becomes a thing of the past. Not everything lasts forever. And really, for the NBA, they should worry about the apathy associated with not just this, but their game. If people are angry, that's fine. You can fix that, okay? If they're apathetic, the ship sailed on some of this stuff. And that deal that you got from the networks for 11 years is an outrageous fleecing of the networks, for sure. The regular season should be the focus. The regular season is borderline unwatchable for hardcore basketball fans, which I am one. That's the real problem. The actual competitive part of basketball, the competition part, which the All-Star Weekend is not, the All-Star Game is not. It's not a game. It's an exhibition. The games from October through the end of March are the real issue for the NBA to solve. Focus on that. Abolish the All-Star Game. Put it on VH1 or Stars or the E! Network. Mic the players up. Let them hang out and celebrate each other, and there will be an audience for that. You know, this thing that you're talking about on Netflix for the Olympic run, and you said you're going to love Kevin Durant. I think some of that stuff can be really entertaining, seeing what kind of people these guys are in real life. So that may have a bigger market since they have passed on trying to play this game in a way in which the league would like them to play it. But the real issue is the NBA from October through March. Now, it's not an issue for me April on. That is the opposite of the regular season product. That is intensity. That is the greatest athletes on the face of earth competing at the highest levels to win, which is what you want to see when you sit down to watch a competition. And so I love the playoff product. They should not worry about the All-Star product. I think that horse has left the barn, thanks to the players themselves. And they can focus on the regular season product. And there aren't a lot of easy fixes there, but they got to fix that. They got to work on that. Now, there was a lot of discussion, and there's discussion right now, and there will be moving forward, about taking the reaction to this hockey event, you know, international teams going against each other. Look, the idea of the NBA All-Star game being international versus American, you know, as the matchup, it's not a new idea. This has been contemplated before, considered before. But there seems to be a renewed interest in it after the debacle on Sunday night, the debacle of the last several years. Personally, there was a time in which I thought that I would like that format. But I think guys like Durant have made it very clear. This is not a weekend in which the majority of them want to compete. They don't want to do it. So I do think on some level the international players would be into it. But this new group of players overall, they could not care less about the way it used to be. The way that Kobe and Michael and Magic and Bird played it. You know, creating, by the way, and those guys didn't create it because it came long before them, but it was at one point a midwinter or late winter spectacle, which had some stature on the sports calendar, and it respected the competitive part of the sport. That's not what these players want. So move off of that. I don't think international versus American is going to solve that, because I think there still will be too many players that are going to come down and are going to pull up from half court and they're not going to guard, and it's just going to be dunks and 40 to 60 foot 3-point shots in the game. And I don't think that'll work anymore. There was a time in which I thought that would work. I don't personally think that will work anymore. Okay. Denton, maybe you had some thoughts on this. You can share those with me and everybody else when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. Kevin Durant, by the way, yesterday or last night, tweeted out the following. I think it's more fun to complain about the NBA than to actually watch it. Crazy. Cancel all again, and let's just give everybody a break since we're so miserable around this time. You know, to Kevin, I said the quote before, he's being honest, but here's what he should understand. It is right now a benefit to all of them that people are still complaining. Complaining is much better than ignoring. And I think a lot of people are ignoring now more than they're even complaining. That's a problem that's really difficult to overcome. People like Adam Silver are smart enough to understand, as long as they're still bitching and complaining, that's something you can address. It's when they're no longer around to complain that you got a major problem, because they've gone out and they've found new things to do with their time. What did you think of All-Star Weekend or whatever they played Sunday night?
The Sunday night stuff was kind of whatever. I could do it with no Kevin Hart for like 2 years. I don't need Kevin Hart on the broadcast. I don't think he adds anything.
He took a pounding, didn't he?
And he should have taken a pounding. He doesn't really add anything. No one is. I understand they're trying to go out and grab like celebrities.
Well, he didn't ask himself to do it. They asked him to do it.
I know, and they need to stop doing that. They need to understand that Kevin Hart is not a needle mover in that people who are not going to watch it are going to watch it because Kevin Hart is on there. Mr. Beast, right. Maybe, because he is a to the younger generation. I don't really know what he is or who he is, but I know younger people care about Mr. Beast, so they might want to see that.
I don't even know who that person is.
He was the dude that did like the shooting thing with Damian Lillard, the $100,000 for some random kid.
Okay.
So that like I get as a draw. I will say I'm proud of you. You did an entire segment about the All-Star Weekend and didn't mention that LeBron James skimped out on Sunday like 4 hours before.
I had
the game.
That on my list. Yeah.
I thought like the format itself I thought was fine. I mean, it's almost the exact same thing as the Four Nations NHL thing that everybody is raving about. The problem is there's no format of basketball that is going to be appealing if people aren't trying. I don't like you could play it underwater. You could play it on the moon. There is no form of basketball that is appealing if guys don't care that much. And they're not going to care. Now, what I would like them to do, there's been this rumor of a one-on-one tournament where the winner gets $1 million. Scrap that idea, but take the $1 million, double it to $2 million, make it as the prize for the dunk contest so you get people that will actually compete in that thing. I don't need to see a fourth year of Mac McClung. He's really good. I get it. He's from Virginia, played at Georgetown. I'm happy for him. Three-peat champion. I don't need a fourth peat with Mac McClung. I want to see guys that I care about.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I think your point about nothing will work if they're not going to try is the point here. Because they haven't cared and they haven't tried, people have been driven away. And, you know, you got to hope that those people, if you're the league's sake, are just angry and are willing to give them one more shot at this thing. And it might be the international matchup next year. By the way, looking at an international team for the NBA All-Star, how many All-Stars were international players? I'm just curious this year. Do you know?
One of the teams was an international team. In the four teams, there was the OGs, there was the Young Stars, there was the International, and then there was the Rising Stars. So there was a full, I think, eight of international guys. I was like, you're Giannis.
I guess what I'm trying to get at is, can you get to more than eight? Can you fill out a whole 12-team roster for next year's international versus American born if they go that route? Or do we just have eight that are legitimate all-stars?
No, I definitely think you could, because there were I was wrong. There was nine here. There was nine guys that are international. Like, you might have to like stretch a little bit, but like Paolo Banchero, you could, you know, kind of,
yeah,
Italian descent. Hey, you're international for this. Like, you could definitely get to 11 or 12. But honestly, like, yeah, they had nine with Giannis not playing, so eight to play, but nine guys total. That's all you really need in an All-Star game, because you're not going hard.
Yeah, I bring it up because if you went that route, you know, potentially are putting three non-All-Stars on the international team and taking three All-Star spots away from American players. Look, though, that's an easy fix. That's not a big challenge or a big hurdle. I just personally don't think that to your point, if they're not going to care and they're not going to try, then no format is going to fix that. And the idea that because it's international and you're going to be playing for your country somehow in that event, I don't think these guys care. I just don't think that that's going to be a driver for them. I don't even think you can incent them with, you know, an extra $1 million per player if they won. They're worth, you know, generations and generations of money already. All right, Gary Williams will join me next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.